You're listening to Radio Golf Show. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, my oh my. Do we have a show for you today? My name is Frank Forster, and our guest on tonight's program is Mr. Malcolm Duck. Malcolm was born in November of 1960. He was an officer in the Royal Marines for 11 years, commanding men in the Falklands conflict and in Northern Ireland. Then he became a restaurateur in 1991, if I'm correct, when he opened Ducks at Le Marché Noir in Edinburgh. He added the hat of hotelier in 2004 when he purchased Kilspindi House in Aberlady. I'm sorry, lady.
The sexuality of my village is absolutely hilarious because, you know, it's Aberlady, but the number of people that make it into a laddie Scottish boy.
Yeah.
It's very, very modern with this modern era of sexual designation. So I'm sure Aberlady or laddie is happy to be whichever.
I apologize to the Aberlady and to all the Aberladians. There must be a word for the people who live there. We'll get to that later. And you turned Kilspindi House into the world famous Ducks Inn. Since 2019, you are also the director of Scotland, where golf began. The director of the 1457 Society, we'll talk about that. And since 2021, you are the chairman of the Gillon Area Community Council. Malcolm, it is as much an honor as it is a privilege and a pleasure to welcome you to Radio Golf Show. How are you, sir?
And slightly overwhelmed by that welcome, that for a duck that's son of Donald, I didn't realize I'd done all that, I guess. But I'm delighted to come on the podcast to be able to talk about golf generally, or Scotland and golf and my passions on that kind of thing. I've spent many hours in the bar doing it, and it's just a great subject and a great part of the world to be in. And your pronunciation of the French Le Marché Noir was spot on, immaculate.
That makes up for the Aberlady.
I must tell you a story very quickly about, because I'm dyslexic, and we had to write we wrote the menus in the French, in the Le Marché Noir in French. And this came back another day, and I was trying to write quail stuffed with chicken mousseline. And quail is caille, farci à la mousse. Oumous is cabin boy. Caille are testicles.
Oh, God.
Cui and Kai. So this guy was just dissolved in laughter. So you have any idea what you've written? Testicles stuffed with cabin boy. It was a very new into the restaurant scene as a Royal Marine coming in. How to get it wrong in one easy lesson. Brilliant.
This is the way it's going to go. But I got to tell you, we haven't had this much excitement prior to a show since Langer or Crenshaw or recently Rupert Sheldrake, who was on. And I'm especially grateful to you for rescheduling on such short notice after I got clubbed by that coronavirus at the end of last month. So thank you for that. In August this year, Malcolm, you posted a video online in which you said, after 19 years of making memories at Ducks Inn in Aberlady, it is time for Malcolm and Fiona to duck out. How much do you miss the charisma and the significance and the vitality and the extraordinary character of the place you and your wife took care of for nearly two decades? How much do you miss the Ducks Inn?
It's a bit early to say, to be honest, Frank. I mean, it's weird. That's all I can say. I mean, I remember my in-laws retiring and how retirement happens, and I think through my Falklands and Royal Marine experience, I've learned to separate myself into two people. There's the cerebral, the kind of brain person that understands the logic, and there's the emotional person. So cerebrally, it was the right thing to do at the right time with the right offer. I hope I'd made the same decision at 40 or not. And emotionally, there was so much going on. It could have just happened, and now we're not doing it. And now, you know, it's very strange. Bjorn and I are living with Ken McKinnon in Edinburgh, professor of maths. He is the godfather of our two children, and his wife sadly passed last year. So it's very nice to be here with him in the anniversary of those things. Mm-hmm. But it's also from a husband and wife going from full on to brakes on, very good to have an intermediary.
Okay.
To negotiate. So it's very, very strange. And actually, on mental health and all the rest of it, in the last week, I've actually found it a bit tough. We went down, one of my Roman sergeants had died, so went down to his funeral down by the Wash, and we stopped off in York, just outside York, in the Lime Tree Inn. If we get the chance to go to the Lime Tree Inn, run by Rob Mitchell and his wife, Go, one of the best chefs in the UK. Mm-hmm. He used to work for me. And actually going there, on the other side of the table, seeing someone we've kind of brought and nurtured, and you know, we were so keen to see us there. It was just fantastic, and it kind of makes you want to go back in and get into that buzz. And how can you help with that wine matching or pairing? So, I mean, for us, it was very special. For me, especially, I mean, Fiona kind of enjoyed it, but she did a lot of the books. I just, whether I PTSD from the services, whether it's just I'm dyslexic, well, I am dyslexic, whether it's all those other things on the side that keep you moving and busy. We had a 2 week holiday, first mm-hmm. 2 week holiday for 23 years. And people said, Craig, that must have been terrible. I said, no, it wasn't terrible. I had a 23 year holiday. You know, I absolutely and utterly loved what I did. Financially, sometimes it was, to say, challenging. Mm-hmm. For me, a challenge is, can you jump over the table? A problem is the table's freaking broken, and there are eight people come to sit on 10 minutes. So it wasn't, you know, I just absolutely loved it. And, you know, people talk about stress. How do you handle the stress? Someone with a very good analogy, a bow can't fire if it's not stressed. Mm-hmm. It needs to be stressed to fire. But if you leave it stressed all the time, then it becomes inefficient. And hospitality is hard work, but great fun. And hard work and great fun can go together well. But I lay in a hill in the Falklands and thought I wasn't coming out. And I decided in my future life, rugby, golf, whiskey, food, cigars were very much part of it. And that's what I've lived for the last 18, 19, 20 years. And getting out in the golf course, you're away, no phones. You know, even a golf course in a built-up suburb or the nastiest place in the world, it's still green. Mm-hmm. It's still got rough. It's still got different graduations and textures. You're still with golfers, 99% of whom are wonderful people and think the way you do. So it's been very special. And I'm not missing it yet, but mm-hmm. I think it's going to be interesting next year. But I'm still involved with lots of other things to do with golf. And maybe instead of having to haul an old building and a lot of the staff along, that's hard. The staff, you know what? The staff were a joy because it's a team.
There you go.
Building, we couldn't take it any further. And it's they're I don't know what it's going to be called when they reopen it, but they're taking the walls out. Mm-hmm. Massive refurb they're doing, which is what the old lady needed. So mm-hmm. I'd taken where we got to, and now somebody else. It's got a new mum.
Yeah, there you go. If I may ask, what brought about the sale and what brought about the suddenness of it? Because I'm sure that a lot of folks around the world were making plans to come back in the future, and those people that hadn't been there, that had heard of it, it was certainly on their bucket list.
Well, it was, I mean, the answer to that pretty simple is somebody came along with a very good offer. Mm-hmm. So it was a very decent offer. Also, and I don't think this is cerebral me, emotional me. I don't think this is an issue. Like I think I said earlier, I hope I would have made the same decision if I was 40, because you should make decisions for the right reasons. But I've also just turned 63.
Right.
So in some period of time, I would have had to effect a change. What I was thinking about doing was maybe, and I had a couple of conversations about raising some money and buying three or four more and selling my place into a group and being the kind of face of that and taking it forward. But also, you know, what's coming down the line in Scotland and hospitality is really tough. We have a government in Scotland run by, I would say, part of the Scottish National Party, because they're, like most parties now, fractured. The hangover from Nicola Sturgeon, and who I just think was awful, so tight and controlling. But for instance, in the UK, government have given hospitality 75% rates relief. That's not being passed on in Scotland. So the costs coming down the line are big. There are now new laws on tips where staff should always get the tips, but you used to be able to kind of used to be a lot more in cash. So if they didn't come into the house, can't say where they went, but if they didn't come, let's just say they didn't, they just disappeared. That was fine. But now with credit cards and all the rest of it, people are leave, they don't have cash to leave tips. So that's all changing, and that all goes and gets taxed with national insurance. So the base costs are going up and up and up and up. Food prices are going up and up across the world, not just in the UK. And then we paying in the UK, we're paying 20% sales tax VAT, whereas most of Europe is 10. And that's a significant difference when you're looking at pricing and how things work. And that's partly why in the UK hotel prices are significantly higher. And that's sadly going to get worse, because the be good for the hotels if everyone comes to stay, but that's going to be more international than domestic, because they're also bringing in a lot of policies to do with what they call short-term lets. You go to Ely, that great town of Ely with that great little golf course, it's almost dead in the wintertime because it's all holiday homes. So there aren't enough people staying there to keep the pub and everything else open. So people are looking at taking steps to bring legislation in to regulate them. But then they're now, instead of spending a lot of money in the hotel, you could get a short-term let. That's all being challenged. So that's going. So it's a very, the next 3 or 4 years are going to be a very shifting landscape. So opportunity came, there we go, and we made a decision. We didn't make a noise about it. But I'm not going away. I mean, I'm still very keen to stay involved with golf, help with golf trips, talk to folk. I'm a member, lucky enough, member of Renaissance in Archerfield. So guys want to come and play there, come and play with me. I mean, you need to play with them there. Whereas before I couldn't, and now I can.
There you
So,
go.
I mean, every cloud is a silver lining, and every silver lining is a cloud, but I tend to look at the silver linings rather than the clouds.
There you go. That's a good strategy. Now, I'd like to maybe when I was thinking about what to talk to you about, and there's so many things, but I find it fascinating to ask the children's questions. Why is the grass green? Why does the moon have phases? Why is the sky blue? The very fundamental questions. And of course, the game of golf also has very fundamental questions. Maybe we can start with one of those. Why is the game of golf so fascinating?
Generally, or to me?
Generally, let's start generally.
That's a very interesting question. I think because, the frustration is most other bat and ball sports, you're hitting a moving ball. And for some reason, it's almost easier to hit when it's moving. So you've got this stationary ball, and how the hell do you hit it? I mean, the Black Knight, what's his name? South African.
Air player.
Player, you said, trying to hit the ball in a straight line is almost impossible. Gary Nicol, who's coach at Archerfield, Gary's coached Ryder Cup players and all the rest. We all concentrate on our backswing. He says, you don't hit the ball on the way back, hit on the way forward. So it's you've got to master the hitting of the shot, but you've also got to master the plotting of the way around. And if you listen to Tiger, I remember Tiger said something about, some guys may hit shots better than me, but they'll never plot the way around better than me. So I might not be putting my best, I might be whatever, but I know mentally I can work out how to get from A to B. The pro golfer is always looking for the miss. I was very lucky to walk around Carnoustie with Mark Carnevale, and he was taken around by Tom Watson. And the first time Mark had played in Scotland, and Tom was explaining links golf, and Tom was saying, most of the trouble on links golf course is bunkers at the front, not at the back, hit long, and it's two towards the flag and two to get up and down. So take the trouble out. So if you're, so there's so many different nuances. I can't remember which top lady pro in the States. She was struggling with her three wood and got a lesson from one of the top guys. He said, right, well, first we'll do a playing lesson. They got in the tee and she drove off, and then he took her three wood out and flung it behind her and said, we're not taking that. That's your first lesson. And instead of going for it, she laid up and chipped and parred every and birdied every par five.
Right.
So I think there are just so many nuances to golf. And again, for my background in the services and so on, and again, busy hospitality. I mean, when I ran the Edinburgh restaurant, I used to referee rugby to a reasonable level. So I got me out in the afternoon running, moving around and refereeing. You cannot think of anything else other than the game. If your mind shifts, you've lost it. And the same with golf. You know, Roger Davis said the great thing about golf is you have to concentrate for 8 seconds and completely forget about it for the rest of the time between shots. How do these guys do it on a 5-hour round and under all that pressure? So I think it's about the most fascinating game there is. All different shapes and sizes can do it. Look at John Daly, you know, his lifestyle managed to do it. And then you get a Rory, you know, what a fit young guy he is.
So it's the game that really makes more demands than any other game, the way I understand what you're saying.
I think it does. And I think it can just mess with your head. You know, why is it that coming down that stretch, if you're in a winning position, do you feel pressure? What's the difference? Why do you feel that pressure rather than hitting the first drive or the first approach shot or the first putt? Why is there less pressure on the first drive? Because I can make it back again.
Right.
You know, and all these pressures are self-imposed. It's a little thing between your ears that gets in your way. Or helps you. And again, Gary Nicol, a lot of the guys now have got you know, mental coaches or psychiatrists are trying to get in the zone, or you know, rather than two nines trying to make it, you split into three.
Yeah.
And I think I play off 6.5, 6 point something, and I enjoy playing with, you know, 16, 7, 18 handicappers, because to an extent you can help them. Mm-hmm. I can't help them with a swing. But he's an 18 handicapper and a par four in the first. By the third, I'll say it's a par five. I say, what par is this? It's a five. I said, no, for you, it's a six. Well, what do you mean? Well, you've got a shot. So why are you hitting your driver? It's going to bring all that trouble here. Hit your seven iron. Mm-hmm. What? You hit your seven iron, your seven iron, your seven. You get on the green and you get a par. No, you haven't got a par. You've got a birdie. Well, that feels better. And then you just begin mentally, you're beginning to manage the game.
Right.
And, you know, again, you're coming out with Fiona and I just going through this. I can't remember all the core values, Royal Marine core values, but one of them is a bit one I've always really stands to me is cheerfulness and adversity. So, you know, it comes back to you enjoy stress or not, you know, that cheerfulness and enjoying that pressure, relishing that pressure. You know, it's not guys don't do it if you can't. I mean, numbers of people who've played sport, I mean, and they're shaking before they have to do the thing they know they can do really easily. But that's the folk that's it gives them the drive and gives them the focus. Golf's also the only game where we can all walk and play where the greats have played. You know, you can walk on the same green as St. Andrews, you can walk over the Swalcombe Burn, all you guys have stood. And had their, you know, even for, you know, for Nicklaus, you know, I was there when Watson went across it, sadly in the middle of the night, you know, when Big Easy, they were going to try and pull him off and because it was dark and bring him on the next morning. Big Easy, Ernie said, no, this man is finishing his round, you know, bringing him out in the morning. And we'd all got away and came back. And there was still a big crowd, just about dark coming in. So I think all these things conspire to make it a great game. I think we need to keep the traditions, and you know, do we have hoodies and all the rest? Because if you take something away, make sure you have something of value with which to replace it. So don't take away. If you take away, you know, forms of dress and etiquette and so on, so then you'll chip away at the honesty.
Mm-hmm.
Golf is mostly such an honest game. You know, people will call fouls on themselves, and if you don't do that. Really, you're not going to be play with many good people at decent golf courses because that's golf.
Well, in some sports, you get celebrated for faking fouls, you know, which is totally the opposite.
Well, and rugby, so, you know, football they do, but rugby union, which is, you know,
right,
you know, a kind of funny sport we do. I mean, it's absolutely cheating. Cheating is lauded. You know,
right.
I can't get the football falling over and they practice falling. And
exactly.
You know, but the, I mean, in the old days in rugby, you know, the line out, you know, the two lines of guys, the ball's thrown in the middle. They could be as close together as he wanted, but the guy's trying to jump and he can't because his opposite number's got his hand in his pocket.
Yeah, right.
Or the guy's getting taken out off the ball, but that's accepted as part of the game. Whereas in golf, yeah, it's not cheating. It's you against the course, against the right opposition.
And I think what's also fascinating to me, I mean, all of us, no matter what level we play at, we've been in a position where after 14, 15 holes, we're on our way to our best round ever. And then by the time we walk off the 18th green, we're ready to throw the clubs away. I mean, it's, you know, it's just, you can be so good and so bad on two different days. It's just incredible. What would be some of your favorite golf memories personally, whether it's playing or watching or reading or?
That's really interesting. I'm not a great reader because I'm dyslexic, and every time I put my book up, my father said, "Great to see you reading," which made me put it back down again because I'm an obstinate duck. I don't know. I mean, there's so many different people playing with. I mean, walking around with Tom Watson, obviously, for 18 holes with Mark was pretty special. Roger Davis took me down to Turnberry, the seniors, and he said, "Keep quiet and stay close." And so I kept quiet and stayed close, ended up on the range, and then worked out. It was his coach, and he had Watson beside him, Nicholas beside him, and Gary Player. And very funny, someone said, "Did someone take a picture?" And I said, "Thankfully, no. You don't need a picture. That's just a great memory."
Right.
But that's a kind of celeb bit. But, you know, playing golf, I just now and again, it's a memory you'll get back or not get back as you just hit that great shot. And it just feels so good. And especially with hickories, because I've got into hickory golf, you know, more uh-huh. recently. Not an expert by any means. And one of the funnier ones was I mean, with golf, also Renaissance Golf Club's got me really up there because, you know, Jerry Savadi and the team came within 4 weeks of me starting the Ducks. So we started at the same time. So we were HQ with Jerry and Tom Doak and Don Platchek and all these guys staying with us. So I've got to know them really well. And seeing that course evolve has been fantastic. The first Scottish Opens, first Scottish Women's Open there was fantastic. And the seniors open was at Archerfield, I think, and we had a member pro, which I won with Roger Davis, and you get kind of flights, and we were playing against two other guys, and now it's alternate shot foursomes.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So Roger had driven down the 18th, and he said to me, and David Frost's caddy was pulling my trolley, and the pin was back left. And about 18th green at Renaissance, if you remember it from the Scottish Open, runs up with a mound at the back.
Mm-hmm.
And he wanted me hit it at the wall, the left side of the green. I'm thinking, you know, I'm not going to get home, but surely he wants me right to open it up. He said, "Ducky, just hit you three wood." I said, "I can't hit that dodge. Is it all right? Can I hit my rescue three?" And I creamed this thing. And it was walking along. And I said to Frosty's caddy, "Why the hell did he want me to hit it there?" He said he expected you to slice it under pressure. You just exceeded his expectation. So that those kind of moments people have got that kind of work for you, but don't. I mean, that which other game?
Yeah.
In which other game could you go and start a game, and within the space of two holes, time wise, be ripping the Mickey out of somebody else you've never met?
Yep.
I don't. There's another game where you could do that.
Yeah.
Kilspindie Golf Club, you know, playing at Kilspindie. If you look across the Fife, there are two hills which you call the Paps of Fife. Pap is a Scottish word for a breast. So, you know, maybe not much say that nowadays, but that's what they're called. So that reminds me of San Carlos Water in the Falklands. And when the RAF were in St Andrews, you had the planes buzzing down, which brought back those not so great memories, but also You're now in a safe, calm space in a beautiful place with friends. So it's like tear in the back of the eye now thinking about it. I remember trying to make a 6 foot putt, kind of what you're saying. You're playing really well and you're coming on. I'm looking at this putt and I think, you know, it really doesn't matter a tuppenny right. toss whether I get this. It just a beautiful day with great people and I've been playing well. And
yeah.
I mean, I'm lucky to be here and lucky to be alive. So, yeah, I mean, I think the great thing with golf, every time you go out, you'll get a memory. It's why we talk about it so much to our wives and wives and husbands when they come back.
I read somewhere on one of, maybe it was on the Ducks Inside when you were still there. I mean, it said that the Ducks Inn was based on service excellence and making memories for customers. I think that's
absolutely
that pretty much says it all. And we'll talk about hospitality and things like this in a minute. But a few words and a few thoughts about the evolution of the game. I mean, we got the ball discussion going on again, and maybe we can start with the playing field, because that's what's really, to me, the amazing part about Scotland. And I played most of my golf in Scotland in East Lothian. The golf course. Can you teach an old dog leg new tricks? That would be my question to you.
I think these golf courses, I mean, there was a plan very recently and they got Gil Hans or someone in to look at totally redoing golf. And I think that's, and hopefully that's been put in the back burner because why, and I didn't see the plan, so maybe being a bit harsh, but why are you going to change a great thing that's been there forever into something that's new and modern? But going to the, you know, back the golf course in a minute, I mean, I think we need to keep the game of golf as a game where the greats can play and everyone else can play. And that's where the ball comes in. I'm glad to see they're looking at bringing the ball back. Roger Davis, Dodge, he reckoned if you take half the dimples off the ball, then if they want to hit it hard, they can, because the dimples help correct the flight. I don't know much about this, is Dodge telling me this. So the boys now can whack it. So the good ball strikers aren't rewarded. The big hitters are rewarded. So, but, you know, you take someone who's played links golf when they go to the States or parkland golf, that guy's got to learn new tricks because you can't putt from 60 yards off the green. But I think and again, watching Roger, these older guys can hit shots that the young pros don't hit. I'm not saying they can't, but they've never been taught. They've never been taught how to hit a 3 iron 150 yards.
Right.
You know, why would you? And again, one of Roger's discussion was, you know, who'd you watch? Seve. And Seve was huffing and puffing around and there was a double bank green 120 yards out. And eventually Seve pulled a 3 iron out, hit it full tilt into the bank and it bounced up to, you know, 3 feet. And who else in the world would have thought of that golf shot?
Yeah.
Links is, yeah, you got wind to deal with. You've got dry ground in the summer. You've got damper ground in the winter. The rough in most links golf is pretty penal. And you look at the slope ratings of the course now, and my understanding is in slope rating more comes from the States and water is ranked high, whereas rough isn't. Well, you try finding your ball in the rough at Muirfield.
Yeah, absolutely.
It'll be in the lake.
Absolutely. I mean, none of those great courses in Scotland have island greens or a lake on every hole or things like this. These man-made problems, let's call them, that make the game more difficult for the average golfer.
I mean, it's kind of what, I mean, again, you know, the evolution of golf is, where did it start? I mean, organized golf certainly started in Scotland. And it's grown up from there and has expanded and it's evolved. And I think it should continue to evolve. And I think it's now good that the average player has such good equipment. Would it be nice to see the guys playing with something different stuff? I mean, I think watching girls golf is fantastic.
I agree.
Not just that I think boys are ugly and girls are pretty. It's just, you know, their ball striking, the length they hit it is more similar to a guy. Their rhythm is fantastic. You can see that without being ripping the ball to bits and being built like, you know, side of a shed, you can hit the ball a long way. Their pace of play in could pick up, but so could the boys. And it's nice to see girls' golf coming through. I mean, Katrina Matthews in Scotland is just such an undersung person, Dolly Pepper to an extent. But what Katrina's done in Scottish golf is, nobody knows her. Yeah, it's not about length, and that's why I love about Kilspindie. Kilspindie, I've taken quite a few tour pros down to play there, and it's, even I'm 63, and I probably only need a driver in one hole. And I've had quite a few people staying with us, and fathers and sons coming, and it's the father's more chance of winning at Kilspindie, because if you look at something like the fifth, the kids put it through the back of the green in the par four, but it's a much harder shot coming back than it is landing it short and coming up. So a great match play course, because it levels things out. And the fourth at Kilspindie is one of my favorite holes in golf, because it's right down the side of the sea with the green tucked into the corner, so out of bounds on the right and out of bounds, and you're down on the beach, so you got a decent drive, and then you don't hit the right shot coming in, and it kicks forward. You really got to think your way around it, and it doesn't matter if you're Rory and you can hit it 90, 100 yards into the sea past the green, because that's not the hole.
Well, I mean, you think about places like Prestwick and Royal Troon and Turnberry and North Berwick, Carnoustie, Gillon, Royal Dornoch. I mean, just the names of those places roll off your tongue like it's, liquid golf gold. I think the famous Henry Longhurst wrote about that rugged British game. For you, is golf by the sea the real golf, and everything else is a man-made substitute?
No, because no, because we were saying that Italy has some great golf courses in England, but the difference. Come on, the remind me to come back to the difference between Scotland and England. But going to the other golf course, Crieff, beautiful little golf course, Muckert on the way to Gleneagles from Edinburgh, going my back road. Fantastic golf courses. These are inland golf courses, but anybody play golf in Scotland? That's anybody's everybody, and the fishwives from Musselburgh, one of the oldest competitions going. So it wasn't sexist. It was. Everybody played it. So at Kilspindie Golf Club, you have the Aberlady Club, so the artisan clubs. So these artisan clubs are very common in Scotland. North Berwick's got two, Gullen's got one or two. And the Aberlady one is for the it was really for the estate workers. So you look at St Andrews, you had the R&A, and the R&A were kind of from the gents, and they now kind of run golf, but and then the St Andrews Club, that was for the artisans, and then the new club came along, which I'm new club members. I'm being very rude to you in a second, but I'm only kind of teasing. So the new club was you've got to be half nice these days. The new club was for the guys who didn't want to get in the St Andrews Club, because it was kind of working class and they couldn't get in the R&A. But again, St Andrews, the R&A let women in fairly recently. But prior to that, let's say there were six golf clubs in St Andrews. How many were single sex of the six, do you think?
Least five.
Six.
All six. Well, there you go.
And three girls, three boys. I'm including the putting club, and the. And somebody will email
There you
or
go.
text and shoot me down saying we're wrong with the wrong. So the St. Rules, St. Regis, and the putting club were
Right.
all girls, and the R&A, St. Andrew's Club, and the new club were all boys. Now they share courses, but I think there are currently still more girls' clubs and single sex female clubs in Scotland than male. So.
I remember in New York, in Long Island, the Garden City Men's Club, it was called. And it was a beautiful golf course, very exclusive and just men. Why isn't that okay? I mean, I don't, I mean, you could have women's clubs,
Well,
men's clubs.
this comes back to freedom of expression, freedom of thought. And I'm going to go through this very quickly, because I don't want to program discussing, sex right or wrong. But I mean, certainly in Scotland, it was everybody. And it's going back to the women men thing. Women had a tough time on job and work and roles, very much so. And that pendulum needed to swing. And I think it has swung a long way, but it's swung probably too far in some ways, not far enough in other ways. But now you're seeing, I mean, the girls, European girls tour is tough to make a living on.
Yeah,
and great absolutely. Offers. And I don't quite understand why very quickly on this, we've now got Liv and all this money pouring in, and you can't fund something channeled down into letting quality kids play golf of either sex. And then the problem is that, you know, for the girls to get there, they have to try and make money somewhere, or their parents have to be rich. So it favors that. But going back to Scotland was for everybody. So, you know, if you lived in the town like St Andrews is a municipal course. You know, it's not a private course.
Right.
Muirfield got a bad rep about all its women's stuff and all the rest of it. Actually, you know, women play golf as easily as you. A boy or a girl could play golf at Muirfield as easily as you or I could. You needed to be invited. The lunch thing was that women couldn't eat in the dining room. That's terrible. It wasn't terrible. It's because of old-fashioned stuff. It's a refectory dining table. You have to go and get your food. So you wouldn't expect a lady to do that. So ladies went to the captain's room. You and I couldn't go to the captain's room. Well, that's all changed now, and it's moved on, and Muirfield is now open. Still kind of hard to get into, and if you don't want to obey the rules, then you're not the kind of person to join that club. But that should be the same for any club anywhere. England was much more middle class. England golf was much more part of society. It was a bit more elitist, but that's all moving and changing now. You look at the prices of golf in Scotland going through the roof. A lot more non-member clubs are being built, and great golf courses, Dunbarney, King's Barnes, Castle Stewart. Tom Doak's doing a new one up at Cup. Well, it's not actually, it's Tom's doing it, but it's, he's forgotten who's leading on it.
We do want to talk obviously about the home of golf and where the home of golf is, because everybody is being told that it's St Andrews. Maybe we can start with Scotland being the home of golf before we get zoom in a little bit more. But to me, the difference, I mean, you know, in the States, you have a lot of great golf courses, you know, but you have to travel thousands of miles from Wingfoot and Pine Valley to Pinehurst and Augusta to Paso Tiempo to Pebble Beach. You know, you in Britain, and I'm talking about first about Britain, you can play all courses pretty much from a base, whether it's London or Liverpool or Prestwick or Edinburgh.
Yep.
Right. Now, Prestwick. I mean, the airport in Glasgow is in Prestwick. I mean, that's where the first Open was played in 1860. I mean, and these are all amazing things. And you had talked somewhere about these 21 great golf courses within a 20-mile stretch in East Lothian. I told you before, I was fortunate enough to begin my golfing life in that area, starting at Royal Burgess, moving over to Brunsfield and Silvernose and Braids and all those. I mean, the city limits of Edinburgh has how many golf courses?
Braids is a great golf course.
I mean, in the city of Edinburgh, I could not believe it, and this was in the 80s, that, you know, they were in the middle of town. There was a golf course, and people would get off work in their work clothes. They were, I don't know, working on the docks or something, sling a bag over their shoulder and play. But let's talk about this stretch from Edinburgh out to North Berwick. Because you're right in the middle of it. I mean, you're more towards the end of it, where all the action is Gillen, Aberlady. What are some of the courses that...
We're really, really running from Musselburgh out to Dunbar. So when I came to East Lothian, I'd set up a thing called the Edinburgh Restaurateurs Association, which is the first ever, first or second in the UK. So we'd done one, but weren't sure. A week apart, didn't know about the other one. So we ended up setting this kind of group of everyone working together, because my Royal Marine background, you know, we're all the shoe shop syndrome. If we're all together, let's let's work together, get them there, and then fight for them once they're there. And you know, it's all about team. So the golf course on its own, you talked about it, stuck away way out here on its own, it's not going to attract anyone. They can one round, then they're gone. Where do they go? The fact there are 21 golf courses within 20 minutes drive. 20 minutes drive from Aberlady, so maybe 40 minutes from end to end. So we ended up calling it Scotland's Gulf Coast, because I got hacked off with St Andrews having stolen the home of golf from Scotland, because Scotland's the home of golf, but they have that embargoed title of the home of golf. So a bit tongue in cheek. The Scotland is where golf started, or where golf began, which we'll come to later. But the East Lothian it's a microclimate. There are millions of microclimates. I get that. But East Lothian really is, because the west of Scotland is high, east is low, so the eastern rain shadow. And then you have the River Forth going out, and Gullan Hill means that when the clouds come out during the day, they don't land to go up. So they go down towards and rain on Fife. Sorry, Fife. Not always on Fife. They go down the river, or they cut inland. And then at night, when the pressure changes, they come inland, so we get more rain in the evening. So by and large, we have pretty dry days and great links golf course. So you got, you're running out, you've got three in Musselburgh, you've got the old course, the nine holer, which was where the second, that was the one of the three courses with the Open, Prestwick, Musselburgh and St Andrews. And the Honourable Company, who now play at Muirfield,
right,
was their second home. They started at Leith Links and they wrote the rules of golf. Which got lost, and St Andrews were claiming to have had them. But then actually one of the rules talks about a piece of ground on Leith Link, so it obviously wasn't. So we've got that history. So Muirfield is the only golf club to have hosted an Open and a Ryder Cup. And Muirfield's hosted everything. And then you had Musselburgh, two other courses in Musselburgh, one Parkland, Royal Musselburgh. Royal Musselburgh is, I think, got the longest played for trophy in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And that the hole cutter, the drainage pipe that cut the first hole that we all now play to at Old Musselburgh, is now there. And the Fishwives of Musselburgh won the very early organized games of golf with women. It goes way, 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 way back. So women have been playing golf in Scotland forever. And all these courses kind of evolve. So you're coming up, you've got Musselburgh, then you get Long Nidri, which is a Donald Steele course. And it's kind of quirky because it's a third links, a third parkland, and a third heathland. Then you're coming into Craigie Law, which is newer, right beside Kilspindie, then Lough Ness. I mean, literally, you've got Craigie Law, Kilspindie, the Bay, Lough Ness, Gullan 3, Gullan 2, Gullan 1, the town, Muirfield, Renaissance, two at Archerfield, North Berwick.
North Berwick, seriously.
It is. Ayrshire, I mean, I call Ayrshire the wet coast, if James are hearing this, because it's the west coast, but the wet coast. But there again, you can play from Prestwick right through to, not quite to Irvine, right through to Dundonald. You know, it's a, you know, with East Lothian, Scotland's Gulf Coast, Ayrshire, Angus, Fife,
yeah.
Highlands, you know, St Andrews and Dornoch. I mean, these are quality courses. I can't remember how many there were in the 1850s, 60s, 23. Dornoch was one. These were the kind of courses that were going at the beginning, and it was the spread of golf came from the transformation from the feathery to the gutty. Mm-hmm. It was the feathery ball. A cobbler could make three, I think it was three or four balls in a day, and the top hat of feathers was what filled it. And then the gutty ball came along. Do you know what the first golf club that was formed outside the UK?
The first golf club outside the UK, Calcutta?
Well done, exactly.
Yeah, there.
Very quick. So from there, the gutta purchase, that's what they used to ship stuff back and protect it, and someone was molding it. So the first manufactured golf club came from there. At the same time as engines and trains, and so that's where the expansion, lawnmower, and all that came from. But all these, you know, Dunbar, Gullan, Kilspindie, all these courses go back way, 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 way back to then. And probably something like Kilspindie, and these, there would have been five or three or four or five or six whole courses, because the mariners were waiting for the tide to do the trade with Holland and so on, backwards and forwards. And I think most of the wood came from Holland. The bow makers made the shafts, and the cobblers made the balls. And deviating onto history, and you've got the story about golf starting in Holland to something in the ice, and I cover that in the 1457 podcast. There've been many stick and ball games, so I don't think golf on ice is golf. So I'll just put that in the bin. End of discussion. Thank you very much. So organized golf started in Scotland, and grew from there, and really spread really through
Do you think it started before I ask a question? If you get up early enough in Abilady in the summer, it's, I mean, it's light forever, pretty much. How many courses can you play in a day if you get up early enough?
How many?
Yeah. Different courses.
Four? I mean, I.
Four, five?
Yeah. I mean, you're light by 5 o'clock,
Yeah.
4 o'clock.
And until you can play
I
till one.
sometimes knew what time it was when it was getting light because I was coming back from the
There you
bar.
go.
On the last actually in the last 2 weeks, guy Andy Evanson came in, and we shouldn't have said he was, sorry Andy, but they had a nice bottle of wine. Then that night they came for a bottle of wine, and that between four and six of us, I think 12 bottles of wine later, and some great wine.
That's appropriate.
At 8 a.m. we were finishing a bottle of Paul Rogier. So Americans I was maybe going to play with came down, and I went across the cottage view and I said, "What are you doing? If you're going to play golf, the American boys?" I said, "I don't think so." And I was very indignant for about half a second and realized she had a point. Woke up about 4 o'clock.
There's got to be some incredible stories about the Ducks Inn. I mean, can you order a half a pint at the Ducks Inn? Because I remember the last time I ordered a half pint in Scotland, they asked me if I was on antibiotics.
That's probably the polite question.
Oh,
Yes, you can, but
can.
it doesn't happen very often.
Yeah.
The guy Doug Wilkie, who actually was the creator of the putting games, who came out with the phrase, you can overwater whiskey, but you can't over whiskey water.
You can overwater, you can't overwater whiskey. Yeah, that's very nice. That took me a while to
Yeah, you got to make sure you're
get
vaguely sober when you say that
going.
one.
I'm 62, so it takes a while. But maybe that's a good because how you got into and because you became a restaurateur, and it wasn't just any old restaurant. I mean, this Ducks at Le Marché Noir was. Got a Michelin guide gourmand, which is like a Michelin star, but it
Not
relates
quite, but
price
yeah.
value, right? Did I understand that
It was
correctly?
it's quality of price. And actually,
Right.
the guy I was talking about, Rob Mitchell, was my chef then. And actually, if we hadn't sold, I don't know, but I think we were pretty close to getting a star because I know from the AA that we were going to be three or four AA rosettes, and that's about the same as a star. And the Michelin guys were in quite a lot, and I think I possibly upset them because we closed in the January, so they
Yes.
stopped talking to me after that. But the But they'd
But
actually put Aberlady in the book, and I said to them, "Look, I don't think it's ready to be in the book." Michelin Guide is one of the most underused guides I think there is. People talk about the stars, but actually, the places with knives and forks are fantastic, honest, great places to go, and it's one of the best guides going. But no, the restaurant was a fun
yeah.
place.
I mean, it had a Wine Spectator commended wine list and all these things. Were you able to? And I know you like cigars, and I love your new website, Malcolm the Duck, because it's got this great picture of you with the Partagas. I think the Series D number four or something like that. Were you able to smoke at the Ducks Inn at those days? Or was, I mean, here you can't smoke anywhere inside.
That smoking law came in when I was in Aberlady, and it was very funny because we were still staying in Edinburgh, but my daughter school-wise had gone to North Berwick, so I was staying out there. Fiona was in town with Og, I did nights about and so on. I remember when the smoking law came in the green room behind reception, there was a fire, and it was January, and there was nobody there. Place was empty. We were open. The place was empty, and I was doing the bar on my own, doing everything on my own because there was no customers and no staff. And costs, and I'd been given a Bose speaker, and I was playing, I can't remember, Vaughan Williams or something, or Hollow Mountain Kings, Peer Gynt, or something classical that was uplifting, and drinking a whiskey, I think I was drinking a whiskey, and I thought, I really want a cigar. So I went and got a cigar, and I lay on the floor, lit my cigar, and started blowing the smoke up the chimney. I'm 48, and I'm in my own place that I own, and I'm a law-abiding citizen. And I thought, what the hell are you doing, Duck? Go sit up and just smoke, and go to bollocking for my wife the next day for smoking in the building. There's nobody there, you know.
Exactly. It's
So
yours.
we needed it, it's the Edinburgh restaurant was interesting because people would smoke at the end of the evening, didn't smoke because of the food. Aberlady, it was horrible. But I wish they'd let us do something about it with ventilation. Because what I can't stand nowadays, I really don't like seeing people standing outside, all these people standing outside the cigarette butt ends, and you've got to walk through a fog of stuff. And you can say don't, but it's quite hard. And my background's Royal Marines, commandos, and freedom of speech and freedom of choice for me is absolute. I mean, it's everything. If we lose those, if we lose those values, lose those things, for me, we lose everything.
Yeah, well, we're certainly at a bifurcation in society where, it feels like sometimes we're not only being told what to say, but how to say it, which is pretty scary. Your favorite cigar shape, size, brand? Want
Monte Cristo number two, otherwise
We're in the
anything.
same boat. Torpedo, absolutely. Any day of the week. Any day of the week. But and you mentioned your career in the Royal Marines, and then you have this incredible career in hospitality. Are there any specific childhood memories that foreshadow your professional life that you can think of?
Well, it's funny, my father was a conscientious objector in the Second World War. And I joined the Royal Marines, but he became very friendly with a guy called David Stirling. And David, he was the founder of the SAS. So I met David as a kid, and Dad was also a boxing blue. So he was a pretty rugged guy, but very principled Christian. So he taught me very much about principles and all the rest. Mum was a fantastic cook. And I ended up joining the Royal Marines kind of by mistake. The only reason I went for the interviews is I got a free train ticket via Bristol where I could see my brother. And the cost was 3 days in this stupid place called Limpston. And I went there and never looked back. And that's been seminal for me because people and team is what like make life work. That's what I love about golf. It's not hitting the shots, it's who you play with. It's the friends that you make. It's the friends that you take with you. That's what makes it. And West Belfast in 81, and then the Falklands. It's not just losing friends, but in the Falklands, we had an attack on the hill called the Two Sisters. And it sounds all whatever, but we're out economic and 4-1. I gave the order fix bayonets. So you just don't think you're going to come out the other side of that. And we came out with remarkably fewer casualties than we would have thought, but we still lost people who got killed, I think. Lost people as careless, people got killed then. But the next morning, we're sitting there, and Pete Jenkins was my radio operator and made a cup of tea. And we've just done the attack. We've seen our dead. We've gutted three tracheostomies that night. We tried to take care of the wounded. 1 minute you're killing them, the next minute you're trying to, and I'm not saying I killed them and we're not, but the people are getting killed. The next minute you're trying to save their lives. It's kind of wacky. And then the next day, you're sitting there, you're going to have to do it all again the next night. We actually didn't because they surrendered. But I remember, sitting there, looking across the view, you're looking down into the bay and seeing the shells going off. And that'll be one of the calmest times ever be in my life. Happiest times, possibly. And that's not a sad thing. I won't be that happy again. I'll be more ecstatic. I'll have more fun than that. But at that point, you're so surprised you're alive. You've got no family. You've got no stuff. You've got no money. Your guys are your family. You've got to go and lead from the front doing that. So, but you don't have to do that. And you made about 2 hours of total mental peace. And I don't think, I think you've I think very, very few people will ever had the chance to experience that. So I'm going to say I've done a few of these more recently, and the Lynx Diary guys did a little film called People in Golf, and the first one was me. And
yeah,
you know, I talk about going to the, you know, what that's taught me to do. I think waking up in the morning is an absolute privilege. Just thinking a couple of guys who haven't, and it still kicks you in the back, yeah. You know, you hear it, but you just feel that, got to stop a little bit before your voice starts croaking. And I'm thinking a couple of guys who are friends now just got prostate cancer, and, you know, one of them's probably going to be fine. But, you know, the yeah. worry and scariness of that, you know, is difficult. I mean, I got it, but, you know, I know we're going to come to an end. But, you know, for me, waking up in the morning is just an absolute privilege. And my kind of philosophy is you get up in the morning, you go to the store, you draw your cards. Those are your cards for the day. Go play with the best of your ability.
Right.
You can't do anything else.
No, you can't.
If you lost everything tomorrow, if you lost everything this afternoon, everything, you know, family got wiped out, your business is gone, you've got no money. If you wake up the next morning, you get the chance to start again.
Yep, absolutely. And
then you don't.
I believe the film you're talking about was done by Jamie Dornan, correct?
Exactly. Yeah.
So it's a one wonderful piece of work. On the website of the Gillen Area Community Council, it says that you are a firm believer in collaborative working.
Absolutely.
This is what you just described, I think. Let's talk about some of the things that you're involved in now, namely the 1457 Society, the...
Scotland, where golf began,
exactly. What kind of organizations are those? Are those businesses? Are those, and maybe related to that collaborative working philosophy?
So Scotland's Golf Coast, the kind of local tourism thing, we, on the back of that, they got set up in different parts of Scotland. So we all worked together as regions, and that kind of fell apart a little bit. So Jamie Darling was Ayrshire, Alan Minto was Perthshire, Neil Hampton, who's the Dornoch secretary, was up in the Highlands. Jane was Angus, Liam Barnes was Fife, and I was East Lothian.
Mm-hmm.
So Liam and Jane didn't come with us, but we started working together, and from that came Scotland, where golf began. Because we were, you know, where is golf started? What's the home of golf? We can't use the home of golf because it's syndicated to the Lynx Trust. So Scotland,
you use it. It's just like copyrighted, the home of golf.
Yeah, I think so. Don't go on the law and technically Lynx Trust, but I think you struggle to use. Visit Scotland can use it, I think, only with permission.
But let's think about the number 1457. I mean, that's way before Columbus discovered America. I mean, it's unbelievable. So
1457 is where golf was first noted.
Yeah.
When James II banned the wee ball and the big ball. So he banned the golf ball and the football. So that we had so people would practice their archery because the English were coming to try and duff us up again. So that goes right back to 1457 when it was first documented. So the 1457 Society is kind of the golf club of Scotland where golf began. And the four of us are directors of each. Scotland where golf began is collection of golf courses, hotels, tour operators, and whoever else of the industry who are trying to work together. And the aim of that is really to tell people how to come and play golf and enjoy Scotland. Golf in Scotland is not just the golf. It's a little hotel. It's the golf course you've never heard of. It's the fish and chip shop. And we have the 1457 Society podcast that three of us do. And that, which really trying to get, you know, somebody that's just been to Scotland and playing, tell your story. How did you do it? So whether you come on your own, whether you come through a tour operator like, you know, Dave Kerr is one of the guys in the podcast, or Morton Golf, you know, that whether you come through, you know, Perry Golf's a big one in the States. You've got, you know, a bunch of guys in America. Well, a lot of the pros in Germany do it rather than coming through tour operators. But the it doesn't really matter how, there's a vehicle for everyone to be getting involved. So mine coming up, we need to fund it so that we can get enough money to get a couple of the guys a bit of pennies towards living. Jamie's involved in the Lynx Diary, which is a fantastic magazine.
Fantastic. It's a gold standard.
Yeah. And we collaborate quite a lot. So if we're shooting something, maybe they'll use it, vice versa. So that collaborative thing. So if Scottish Golf were doing something, Why can't we use their footage? Doesn't quite happen. So the 1457 Society is go on there. You can join for £49, and we run a series of outings, and that is really for like-minded people. It's not as competitive as you want it to be, but it's about meeting people. We had a girl from the States called Pam, who came across, and she ended up spending about 4 months here, 5 months, played 100 rounds of golf. But I mean, she met everybody because she one contact, the next contact, the next contact, which brings another contact, which brings another contact. So some people will come and she go back and talking about doing a trip with some more people, you know, which tour operator should I use? So you can mention two or three of them. So it all begins to work. And you know, next year, I'm working, how do I fund that? Do we do a page people can just donate to it? Mm-hmm. Because we make little films. You go on Scotland Where Golf Began, you'll see little films about the history of the golf course. 5-6 minutes, I do the voiceover, and it's mostly me and Alan.
Terrific stuff.
Playing. But we'll get some girls into that filming as well, because we're kind of conscious that it's, you know, two old guys hitting the golf balls, maybe not everybody wants, but actually quite a lot of the market is older guys playing golf.
True.
I'm not for just doing things because it's the right thing to do. Mm-hmm. But, you know, my member partner, Renaissance, is a lady called Carol Kaufman, who's very philanthropic towards golf, and just a great lady. And you know, we did a minor sponsorship of the girls, Scottish Girls Open at Archerfield, when they played it as a more like the Dunhill with amateurs in it and so on. It was great fun. So I got to know a lot of the girls in that. And it's just good fun playing with all sorts of different people. So we need to reflect that in the films, but I'm not really into political correctness. I'm into doing the right thing for the right reason. And I think life needs to be simple for a simple duck. So we're really keen to, so say we've done that filming of Darley Golf Course we just did in, which is next to Royal Troon, fantastic golf course. And you know, that maybe gets its name out there. But to make that, you got to get someone to go and film it. You got to get a couple of guys to go and play it. You got to do voiceover stuff. I do the voiceovers for fun, so I'm not getting funded for it. But it's how you get the rest of it out. How does, you know, if Jamie's doing a full-time job or Alan's doing a full-time job, we want to grow it, we want to bring somebody else in. Mm-hmm. If we want someone to do videographer, you know, if we book him for Wednesday and it's raining, you can't do it. You still don't want to pay him.
Right.
How do we do that? So it's about giving back. And I think for me, that's one of the things I'm really, really keen to be getting into. So we'll probably talk to some whiskey companies and clothing guys, and anyone out there wants to help sponsor, give me a shout.
Right.
Because that, you know, product placement could be quite nice. But we'd only take someone sponsoring who wants to also help back, and with our ethos giving back into Scottish golf. And so, you know, a tour operator who's a member, why would they join? Well, if we've done all that filming, if they want to make a film for their thing, well, come and here's the material, come and use it.
Right.
You know, it's that collaborative way of doing things. And I think I said, you know, when you slow the in, Ducks wouldn't have survived. I couldn't have done what I did at Ducks without Kilspindie, without Gullen, without all those golf courses, without the Indian down the road, without the Aberlady Inn. You know, why are you going to the Aberlady Inn? Because it's another pub and it's somewhere else. And the other guys down there are super. And the Indian old guy there with the takeout, you know, when it first opened, I'm going to lose business. But actually, do you know what? They went down and came back before they went to Haddington, didn't come back for the night. So you learn, you relearn that cooperative way of working works.
And what I love about Scotland, what I loved, I mean, I just went there on semester breaks, either on New Year's when the neighbor would come knock on the door with a bottle of whiskey. I found that fantastic. But from the golf wise, you know, I mean, everywhere in the world you play, you get into the clubhouse, if you're visiting somewhere, and you know, what do you shoot, you know, blah blah blah. And in Scotland, they ask you, how'd you find our course? It's a whole different mentality, you know. I mean, it's something really. I can't, you know. I mean, I I shouldn't say I can't stand. I have a problem with people who call golf a hobby. I mean, collecting stamps is a hobby to me. You know, golf is a way of life, and that's the way it's displayed in that part of Scotland.
Yeah. I think you're right. I mean, Ian Eric Anders Lang talks about, you know, what other place can you go in there? And we're walking around with dogs on the golf course, and my dog Zulu used to be there all the time. You know, I had to put him down, miss him like hell. But I mean, it's but the dog should be well trained. Yeah, now people are reason some place or maybe we're not, because people don't train their dogs. They don't train their kids not to cross the road. So these kind of old, remember I was talking about, if you're going to change something, have something of value to change it. I don't care what someone wears on the golf course. But actually, if you start allowing everything and you don't, people don't turn up thinking, I'm going to look half smart, that's when it gets into the cheating, the different thing. It's just a set of standards, and it's where does self-discipline come from? My background in the Royal Marines, you're taught discipline, but that teaches you self-discipline. Self-discipline is key. And I think, you know, that, you know, a lot of great new golf courses before, I talked about King's Barnes and Dumbarney, but you're not going to get, you know, the St. Andrews, the great golf course, but if you go onto the Lynx Trust food and beverage places in the golf course, it's not like walking into Kilspindie Golf Club. It's not like walking into the St. Andrews Golf Club. Mm-hmm. Not like walking into Dunbar or Prestwick Golf Club, you know, because you don't meet the locals. And that meeting the locals is really important. And we've got an issue, but we're heading towards a problem with, you know, a lot of the golf courses are now managed by general managers who are commercial managers, whereas mm-hmm. the golf course secretary used to be an individual who understood people and all their. I'm not saying that you guys don't. I know quite a lot of them. They're really good guys, but they're. It's about the bottom line. Mm-hmm. Whereas, you know, golf is a strange thing because tourism is very important, and that's economic, but it's also health and wellness. So you need, you're going to keep the golf club subscription at reasonable level. You need the visitor income to subsidize it. If you put it up, you get rid of the visitors, but right. then hotels don't work, and there are no jobs. If you look right. at East Lothian, you know, what the jobs mostly in, you know, their hotels and the accommodation and the restaurants and the golf course provide a lot of employment for the visitors coming in who bring in the economic benefit. So it's trying to get those things to merge that's interesting. I mean, again, the price of golf in Scotland, some of the big courses nowadays, you know, next year they're going 350, knocking 400.
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty steep. And, you know, one of the issues we have here in Germany is with golf courses. And here we obviously, you know, we have this brown mush of golf courses that were designed in the boom in the 1980s, you know, which, you know, you're lucky if you remember one hole and you're done. But you would think those great golf courses we've talked about in Scotland, they would just market themselves, but is it difficult for you to market it to the outside world?
I mean, I think the big courses, the, you know, the Prestwicks, the Troons, so on and so forth, they kind of St. Andrews always has. I think it's not me, but when I came to East Lothian and we started Scotland's Gulf Coast. A guy called Dave Isaac lived across the road, and Dave, he's one of the top guys doing posters. His company, you know, they sent out the message. That's what they did, and he worked on the brand. Andrew Coulthart lived in the village. Andrew was just getting into Sky. Alan Minto was still with us, who's been working part time for the council. He did as much, if not more, off work than not. So he and I did a lot of it. We got that, and East Lothian was not the highest ranked in golf in Scotland by quite a long way, but we got that kind of collaborative message beginning to work. And I was saying earlier, we then got other regions kicking off the back of it. Ayrshire had done it with a guy called Stuart Smith quite a long time ago, but it kind of fizzled, I think. I don't quite know that history. But I think that working as team begins to help. But I can't remember the percentage of golf courses in Scotland run by part-timers, but something like 45%. I mean, please don't quote me on the number, but it's a lot of golf courses are run by part-timers. And these little golf courses are cracking. So I'm saying 350, 400, but I mean, Kilspindie, is it still under 100?
Right.
Gullen 3 is still pretty good value. Dunbar is pretty good value. If you compare these things to Pebble Beach,
right,
then, you right. know, where's the price going? And the UK is changing in economic wealth. I think the gap is widening. But for me, in hospitality, I love the Americans. I love being a member of Renaissance, partly because the crash between the American and British culture is just hilarious. And
isn't it? Yeah, I think
they speak the same language and don't mean the same things.
Great.
But Scandinavians coming across, you know, Germanic countries coming across, you know, especially the Scandinavians, they kind of get Scotland. It's cheaper for them. But, you know, they're not going to pay stupid prices.
Yeah. In Germany, people, you know, they go on these golf trips. They go to Spain or to Antalya or something. You know, they play these brand new golf courses that are really, you know, I mean, they're manicured beautifully because that's what they expect, because that's what they see on TV when they watch the Masters. Any day I would prefer to go on a trip to Scotland than to those, to Marbella or wherever those guys go.
Well, I call Marbella, I call it gin and tonic golf. but if you're getting into golf, starting off, you know, you find the ball easily, I don't really like segregating between boys and girls, but, you know, boys are more powerful, so they hit it further, girls don't hit it as far, all that kind of stuff. Women mentally are much tougher than guys. Maybe guys are tougher physically, so there's a balance both ways. Links golf is harder. It's windier, more rain. So you kind of have to want to play golf maybe a bit more to play golf in Scotland, rather than just being a hobby.
Right.
You know, the stamp collector goes. And there's some, I'm not knocking Marbella or these places, some great golf courses, but I went to Portugal with my wife at the side for a couple of weeks. I wasn't tempted to get my golf clubs out. I wasn't going to take them anyway because it was her, and that was time off and decompression time. But I don't know if you know the story of Peer Gynt, you know, Hole in the Mountain Kings, that music you might recognize, not with me singing it. The story of Peer Gynt is how he goes around the world. He leaves his wife, goes around the world for years in search of happiness, comes back depressed, shattered, not having found happiness, only to find it at home with his wife. And it's a bit, I think, leaving East Lothian to play golf or leaving Scotland to play golf is a bit like the story of Peer Gynt, because luckily I've heard the story, so I learned a lesson through somebody else. But you almost have to go away to realize just what you've got. And, you know, I've not done much, but I've been a bit to the States, a bit different places. I'd like to do a lot more of that now that we're not playing. Yeah, I mean, Scotland is, and those links courses, it's not about length. You know, Prestwick's the same. The blind shots, Prestwick's got the longest old continuously played championship golf course in the world. And it's,
So they're doing no modernizations or things like this on these courses, trying to make them longer. I hope they're not. I mean, you mentioned before that.
Gullen was looking, and I think there was a big mix and whatever, it got changed. I think they've said no for me, thankfully. But I mean, progress is progress. You can't stay
on. Sure, absolutely.
The ball's moving and so on. But I think with these things have been there for a long time. And I think Tom Doak said to Tom there, maybe thinking about changing Kilspindie, and his jaw dropped. Why would you change it? And right. The joy of Kilspindie is it's short. The joy is it's different from other places, but it's still challenging.
Well, you get rewarded for hitting it straight, for keeping it in play.
Or hitting it not too far and keeping it in play for sure.
Right.
Yeah.
And even on a day with no wind, I remember playing Gill number two in the fog where there was hardly any wind, and it was really tough track. I got to ask you one thing though. Jim Hartzell was on this program, and he told a story how the Ducks Inn ran out of duck one day. Is that a true story?
Well, it was, because I refused to offer up my leg or my arm. So I did go and check with Fiona if she'd have her volunteer for her arm or her leg to be cut off. She said no. We didn't always solve that, but we did quite a bit. It's Jim Hartzell, what a treasure he is. What a treasure. I mean, again, you know, what golf can do for someone, and what he's given back to golf.
Absolutely.
If you don't know Jim lost his son, and he wrote a great book that talks about how he got back into the world with golf.
Yep. Yeah, great ambassador of the game, and it's just a story. And one more thing I got to ask you about the Ducks, and then we'll we'll wrap up the past. Barstool putting. My God, I love that. Did you come up with that?
I glue things together, and I just take all the credit for everyone else's good stuff. So there's a guy in the village called Doug Wilkie, and Doug Wilkie is just one of the bohemians of the world. Very successful businessman and family business, but he made it happen and made it better. And a great surfer. So if the surf's up, you won't find him away, whether it's Indonesia or it's Thurso. And there's a bunch of Irish guys. Their village comes to play against our village and backwards and forwards very early in those days. And the doc across the road, his missus, her dad ran the pub there. And they were coming across, and it was going to be winter time. So if it was going to be bad weather, they'd get some indoor games. And he made the seesaw. And I really was obviously taken with the seesaw. So he brought them in my 50th birthday, this duck made out of elm, which is a kind of bowed belly, and a ramp up into its head with a little hole and two little plugs into its belly. And if you got the ball up the top, it teetered and went down. And that's what we did. And we did this for ages, putting off on the ground. And there's a wonderful guy called Olivier Leglise. Olivier played on tour, played in the seniors tour, and was one of the great French coaches. Romain Wattal and Greg Bourdie, they were kind of two of his guys. So Greg Bourdie had appeared in the bar, and my barman had been caddying for him. And he has a very gorgeous girlfriend called Annabelle, who's now his wife with a couple of kids. And stunning, both good-looking specimens and wonderful people. Anyway, I didn't know them, but as I do wrongly from time to time, I just turned my back on Greg and invited Annabelle for dinner. So just me and you, leave him behind tomorrow night in a nice rest. Me and you, nice bottle of champagne, nice bottle of red wine, we'll have dinner. That'd be great, Malcolm, she said. And turned up, of course, with Greg and with Olivier. So we went through to do this putting, and it was Olivier that took it to the Barstool.
That's a big move.
He lives down in Biarritz, so he plays down the golf courses down there. So he took it to the Barstool, and that was the beginning of Barstool putting. And as far as equality is concerned, the next in the stool was Annabelle. And fantastic. And then an Icelandic team came in, and they were filming it. And what do we do? So that's where the writing on the wall came. Well, that was my idea. I said, let's the Duck of Fame. So that was the first guy to get his name up there in the Duck of Fame.
Yeah. Well, the memorabilia was unbelievable in that place. I mean, I never had the chance to visit it, but I've heard from people. I mean, the stuff you had in that place was just incredible.
They were quite good. I've kept quite a lot of it, but a lot of it I left. A lot of the signed stuff and so on I've got. I'm not sure they're going to use it, so a lot of stuff's gone. So, I mean, I'm the flags and caps and things, I said to the guy, if you're not going to use them, I would like them back at some point. I mean, we've actually got a house in Aberlady. So if anyone's come along, give me a shout. Happy to help out with golf, or if you're stuck for a bed and then shout. My wife says, what are you saying? Well, it's still fine. It's and we don't charge. It'd be good fun. I insisted, but we had to get two spare rooms.
On your website? Does she know it says that on the malcolmduck.com?
The website is very basic. It's very much a holding page. So,
says if you're in the area, drop by.
All right, good. I did that quite quickly, so I have to go, no, good. And there's a contact page on there, so feel free to get in touch.
Will we see you back in hospitality as well?
I've got a two-year kind of exclusion zone for 10-mile area and bits and bobs. So I don't think they'll be too prescriptive on that, because I'm not going to do anything that's, I don't, you know, I want them to succeed. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it's going to be called. It's not going to be called Ducks. You're not going to use the brand, which is fine. So I don't know. I think it's too soon, but I love what I do. I love people. But so many friends I want to stay. And I'm genuinely, you know, my mobile number is 0774067611. And Malcolm at Ducks is my email. So, you know, be in touch. Or if you want to stick them in the bits in the morning, I'm very happy to be spoken to, stay in touch with people. And like I'm saying, I, you know, come play our nationals, Archfield, Kilspindie. They're great golf courses. And through the Scotland where golf began in 1457 Society, yep. Joined the 1457 Society and come and play with all these other guys, lots of international members joining.
Yep, it's a great
thing. We'll get some home from homes on that kind of stuff. So no, I'd like to do some training. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know, frankly. I'm not saying no because I just love it.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, you know, it sounds.
You'll certainly find me in a bar any slower.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, maybe we'll have the chance to smoke a cigar and have a couple of beverages together one day. The websites are 1457society.com, scotlandwheregolfbegan.com, and malcolmtheduck.com. Those are the three websites. Please check them out. I hope we've done a little bit to introduce you to the man himself, and talks a little bit about golf in East Lothian. It's a fantastic place. It's just wonderful, and I recommend Google Earth. You know, we've all used it, and the idiots that we are, the first thing that we look up is the house that we're in, instead of going outside and looking at it. But go to Google Earth. Fly into Edinburgh and then zoom in and cruise up the coast from Royal Burgess over to North Berwick. It's just unbelievable. I mean, the land where the golf courses on are bigger than the villages and towns. It's what golf is all about. And it was fantastic to have you on, Malcolm. I thank you very, very much. I wish you a belated happy birthday. I know you just had a birthday. yeah, there you go.
I'm 36.
Yeah, 36.
I'm dyslexic.
Yeah, I'm 39 for I don't know how many time, but a Merry Christmas to you and your family,
and to you.
And I wish you much success in the new year. I hope we'll keep in touch and we'll have you back one day.
Yeah, thank you so much. It's been great fun. It's interesting how you get back in touch with yourself and exploring thoughts I hadn't meant thought to explore. So it's been great fun.
It sure has. Thank you very much. To the Lynxland, ladies and gentlemen.